classmates, even my colleagues and my students. That was one. Another one I see is I have a very happy family life. I have a husband and children. This one. Third one is a renowned poetess, regarded as one of the greatest poets of the century in America. And I've published and read thoroughly and get awards and all that. That's one of the groups in India. Another one, he says, I'll be an explorer in Africa. Like that. And each one of them, some of them are clear, he says some of them are clear, some of them are too vague. But all of them have some promise. Now he says, I know I cannot have all of them. All of them are desirable. All of them are nice. I want all of them, but I know I cannot have all of them. You would want. And she says, I don't have much money. He says, I do not have much money. As I sat underneath that tree, hungry, one by one those fruits, I say, they began to dry up, shrivel, and drop down dead at my feet. Till the entire tree was empty. And I sat hungry under the tree. She committed suicide. He did become one of the most renowned poets of America, Sylvia Plath. But look at the dilemma of choice. And this is what we face. Now, what does Vedanta say? Vedanta has a very special lesson. Vedanta says that in this forest of choice, you just have to enter supermarket and you have a very time. Forest of choice. In this forest of choice, there is one choice you can make, which will make all the other choices worthwhile. After that, whatever you choose, everything will be worthwhile. And this one thing, if you do not choose, whatever you choose in life will be worthwhile. One scientist in the Indian Institute of Chemical Biology in Kolkata, young scientist, he was telling me this story. He said he had gone for a conference to Japan. Scientific conference. And one of the leading figures in his field, a Japanese professor, he was there in the conference. And it seems the Japanese are very polite and very rigid when standoffish when it comes to social dealings. But they have a party in the evening where they will drink sake or something and then they loosen up. And they really loosen up. They can talk and interact. So this scientist, he said, in the evening in the party where the senior professor was there, he was giving drug, the professor, and he started speaking to this young Bengali scientist. He says, see, I have everything in life. I have achieved the heights in my field. My papers are published every year. I have so many books to my credit. My books are prescribed reading in university courses around the world. Every year I go to international workshops. I've got awards. This is my career. I have a family. Wife and children and all are doing well. I have a nice house, I have fanciest cars and everything. Every year I have international trips for conferences. And then he says, but you know, it's nothing. It's all nothing. And time is flying by, it's all being gone very soon. What is it all for? And he started crying. And then this young man, he said, I don't know what came over me. Suddenly I said, you know, sir, all these are zeros. But there is one. If you put one in front of these zeros, all the zeros will get added. You have one zero, you put one, it will become 10. You have two zeros, you put one before that, it becomes 100. You put three zeros, you put one before that, it becomes 1,000. And he said, I did not even explain what that one is, what those zeros are. That person, he is very intelligent. He understood. Something he understood. He said, who said this? And this young man said, there was a mystic in our land, in Bengal, in 19th century, called Ramakrishna Paramahansa. He said it. And this man said, that is a wise person. It's a really wise person who said this. You are right. Now what is that one? He did not mention that. That one is there. If you add to all the zeros, if you add all the zeros to it, all the zeros become valuable. It gives value to all of you. Without that one, nothing is valuable. It all becomes, it seems to be valuable, it very soon shows its emptiness. Everything shows emptiness. So that one is what we are searching for in the Upanishads, in the Gita, and all the Shastras. In fact, in different ways, all religions are searching for that. All religions promise that. The Vedanta does it in a very reasonable, scientific, and very rational, step-by-step manner. It's very easy to grasp also. Now, we had, Yama had told Nachiketa about the foundation of spiritual life. Trained senses, sad ashwa, like the well-trained horses of a chariot. Mindfulness, samarasta, like the reins with a tightly held. And the buddhi, the sarathi, he says, vijnanavan sarathi, a well-informed intelligence which can take decisions, consciously take decisions, choosing the shreya over the prayer. Now the teaching begins. He says, now again look at that system, body and senses, mind, intellect. Look at that. This is verse number 139. 139. Those who have got books, otherwise just follow me. I'll read it out. Please repeat after me. Indriyebhya parayartha. Indriyebhya parayartha. This is 1310. 1310, not 139. 1310 1310 1.10 1.10 1.10 1.10 1.10 1.10 1.10 1.10 1.10 1.10 1.10 1.10 1.10 1.10 1.10 1.10 1.10 1.10 1.10 1.10 1.10 1.10 1.10 1.10 1.10 1.10 1.10 1.10 1.10 1.10 1.10 1.10 1.10 1.10 1.10 1.10 1.10 1.10 1.10 1.10 1.10 1.10 1.10 1.10 1.10 1.10 1.10 1.10 1.10 1.10 1.10 1.10 1.10 1.10 1.10 1.10 1.10 1.10 1.10 1.10 1.10 1.10 1.10 1.10 1.10 1.10 1.10 1.10 1.10 1.10 1.10 1.10 1.10 1.10 1.10 1.10 1.10 1.10 1.10 1.10 1.10 1.10 1.10 1.10 1.10 1.10 1.10 1.10 1.10 1.10 1.10 1.10 1.10 1.10 1. did Yamatel Nachiketa? Now look again at yourself. He says, the sense objects are higher than the senses. We will not go into this. It's unnecessary to call it in this country, link to complication introduced by Yama. Let's just say first you see the sense objects. Mind is higher than the, he says sense objects, let's say sense objects. Mind is higher than the sense organs. Intellect is higher than the mind. And the Mahat, he calls it the Mahat, that is higher than the intellect. Then you go to 11. 1, 3, 11. 1 dot, 3 dot, 11. Mahata Parama Vyaktam. Mahata Parama Vyaktam. Avyakta Purusha Paraha.
Avyakta Purusha Paraha.
Purushana Param Kinchit.
Purushana Param Kinchit.
Sakashata Paragatihi.
Sakashata Paragatihi.
The unmanifest is higher than the Mahat. The Purusha is higher than the unmanifest. There is nothing higher than the Purusha. That Purusha is the culmination. That is the goal. Now, what has been said here? Let me clarify a few things. Basically, what he is doing here and what we shall also follow is the Pancha Kosha Vichara, the five levels of the human personality. We do that to find out who we really are, to find out the one beyond the five koshas, to find out that one right now. And what he has done here is the at the level of body, he has said sense organs. Physical body, higher than that is sense organs, higher than that is the mind, higher, subtler, and subtler than that is the intellect. Beyond the intellect is the darkness or blankness of deep sleep. Beyond that lies the Atma. The Atma or the self, you, I, our real self, he calls it the Purusha. Why the Purusha? Purusha not in the sense of a man. Purusha also means, Purusha Prakriti means man and woman, and not in that male and female sense. But Purusha here can be derived in different ways. Purishayana Purusha, the one which exists in the city of the body. The body is like a city. The one which exists in this city. The Dehi. This is Deha. Dehi, the one who dwells in it. This is Griha. Those who dwell in it, Grihi. Deha. The one who dwells in this, Dehi. Sharira. The one who dwells in the Sharira, Shariri. So the Shariri, the Dehi, the real Atma, is apart from it. And that's what he calls the Purusha, who is being apart from the house, who dwells in the house, is called Grihi. Being apart from the body, one who dwells in the body, acts in the body, senses through the body, that one is called the Dehi. And the name for that is Atma, or the name here is Purusha. Purishayana, one who rests or stays in this city. The body is called a city. Later on in the Upanishad, they will say, city of 11 gates. So, city, the one who dwells in this city, you, is talking about you. Not something, strange thing called Purusha, you know, like my colon or something like that, the little fellow you hear, Purusha. No, that's you, the passenger of the chariot. In the morning we talked about the chariot paradigm, the passenger in the chariot. You are called the Purusha. It does not mean male or female. Another one is Sarvam Purayati Iti Purusha. The one which pervades everything in the universe, that is called Purusha. So, Brahman, Atman is Brahman, and it pervades the entire universe. Everything in the universe is pervaded. All pervading, omnipresent is Purusha. In that sense of it. So, that's about the term Purusha. Now, there are some slight problems to be. I'll just make some technical comments here before moving ahead with our real topic. Some of you may have noticed, he says, Indriyebhya Paravahyartha. Higher than the sense organs are the sense objects. Now, normally it is not so. What is higher, subtler or more inward? The book or the eyes will see the book. The eyes seem to be closer to me than the book itself. More subtle, more inward. So, sense organs seem to be higher than the sense objects. Why is he saying sense objects are higher than sense organs? This very shloka, in fact, this very mantra has been quoted by Sri Krishna, of course, without quoting it. Simply, he lifted it from here. And he has, in fact, made it easier. He has said, the sense organs are superior to the sense organs. Instead of going through all this. But what Shankaracharya explains here and why the Upanishad says this. See, a technical point, not important, but just to clarify, but out comes. See, according to Vedanta, matter is of two kinds. Sukshma and sthula. Sukshma, subtle. The five elements, Akasha, Vayu, Agni, Aba, Prithivi, are first formed in subtle forms. And those subtle elements, they combine to form the sthula akasha, sthula vayu, sthula agni, sthula apa, sthula prithvi. And out of the sthula panchabhuta, this entire universe which we experience is formed. Now, our sense organs are designed in such a way that they are formed, they actually can sense, they are formed out of these subtle elements. Our subtle body, here we have a physical body and we have a subtle body. Subtle body includes the powers of the senses, the mind, the intellect. This is called a subtle body. The subtle body is made of those subtle elements. Physical body is made of gross elements. Physical universe is made of gross elements. Now, what he means by artha here are subtle elements. So the gross sense organs, eyes, ears, nose, tongue, skin. These are gross. These are made of gross elements. Higher than these five are the subtle elements. So, indriyebhya parahyartha, here he means, higher than the gross five indriyas are the corresponding five subtle elements. So, it's complicated. Krishna makes it simple. He says, sense objects, the gross sense objects are the lowest, then them are the indriyas, then that is the mind, it goes straight, outward to inward. Here it's as if it is a little twisted. That's one problem out of the way. And one more thing, he says, indriyabhya padabhyartha, that is explained, arthibhyascha param mana, subtler than the five subtle elements is the mind. Mind is itself made of the five elements, but it's subtler than them. And subtler than the mind is the intellect. Subtler than the mind is the intellect. Because we will see later on, manomaya kosha, vijnanamaya kosha, like that. Then, instead of subtler than the intellect, higher than the vijnanamaya kosha is anandamaya kosha. He introduces something interesting here, says, buddhe atma mahan para, mahat. He introduces a concept called mahat. You see, when you say, here is the body, then the subtle body, then the causal body, or pancha kosha, annamaya kosha, pranamaya kosha, manomaya kosha, vijnanamaya kosha, anandamaya kosha, then atma. We will go in that way. That's the route we will take. But what he has done here is, your intellect or my intellect is called buddhi. But there is a cosmic intellect. All of our buddhis together, the entire universe, like a cosmic mind. So he says, higher than our individual intellect is the cosmic, individual mind is the cosmic mind. And higher than the cosmic mind is the consciousness, is the avyakta, maya, behind the cosmic mind. And beyond that is the consciousness, which is the Purusha. What he has done is, he has taken us from individual to cosmic. Otherwise what happens is, we will go through the normal process like you do Chidananda Rupa Shivoham. What is the feeling that you get when you chant that? I am not the mind, mano buddhi ahankara cittani naham, I am not the mind, I am not the intellect, I am not the memory, I am not the ego sense, I am not the five sense organs, I am not this physical body, I am not all of this, but beyond this, I am Satchidananda. Alright, you feel yes, possible. When you open your eyes and look at all of them, you feel, okay, are there separate Satchidananda in each of them? Well, here is one Satchidananda. What about the world? So many people. Are there different Purushas, Atma, Satchidananda, Witness, Sakshakshi in all of them? Is it like that? Or is it one? Advaita says one. But we are left with that doubt. How many Atmas are there? How many Purushas are there? Or how many Sakshi? Satchidananda, Chidananda Rupa Shiva. How many Chidananda Rupa Shiva? Each one of us can say Chidananda Rupa Shiva. Is it different from each other? But to avoid that, what the Upanishad has done very tactfully is, at going up individually from the body to the senses to the mind up to the intellect, then it takes a cosmic step. Instead of saying only my intellect, look at the intellect of the entire universe, the mind, cosmic mind, the Hiranyagarbha, also known as Mahan. Beyond that cosmic mind lies the power of God called Maya Shakti. Now we are operating at the conscious, at the cosmic level. Beyond that lies Purusha. Now when you go beyond the cosmic Maya, cosmic mind and cosmic maya, the maya itself, and beyond that you say Purusha, that's the final thing. There no more question can be there that are they all different or is it one? It's one, shining in and through all of us. That oneness is automatically established. If you go individually, technically it will be like the Sankhya philosophy. They end up with by saying each one of us is a separate Atma, separate Purusha, Sankhya. Vedanta says all of us together, behind all of us, is one Atma. So, that has been established, that is the advantage of saying, you go from an individual intellect to cosmic intellect to Maya and then to Purusha beyond that. So, Atma, Brahma, I am one with God, all that is automatically established. Because if you just see yourself as Sakshi, as pure consciousness, Chidananda, Rupa, Shiva, two big questions will remain. What about all these people? They all have separate Chidananda Rupa Shivoham in them? That's one question. Second question will be, what about God? Did not mention anything about God. I am Chidananda Rupa Shivoham, what about God? But in this method, beyond Maya lies God. And you see, you are one with that. So this is the I'm just ironing out some possible questions. Now actually let us go through the process. Instead of going through this process, we will take the route given by another Upanishad, because Panchakosha is the trademark, let's say TM or something, trademark of Taittiriya Upanishad. Brahmananda Valli there, second chapter of Taittiriya Upanishad, there this process has been given in detail, lot of detail. We will not go into all those details, but I'll just take you through the fast track. What you do there is, they say, you are the Atman. You have to realize yourself as Atman. Chidananda Rupa Shiva. Sounds nice, and it's beautiful when you sing it, but I don't see myself as that. How will I realize that? The Upanishad takes what is called the Arundhati Nyaya. Now, it seems that in ancient India, I don't know if it's true today, after marriage, the bride would be shown the Arundhati star, which is very small, tiny. Now to see that star, you can't see it directly. You have to see the moon. Next to the moon, there is a bright star. Next to that, another bright star. Next to that, a very faint little star is Arundhati star. To see that, you have to go step by step. From the gross to the subtle to the succulent. In the same way, because the Chidananda Atma is the most subtle, to understand that, we cannot go in one jump. Difficult for us to grasp. So the Upanishad has provided us with Arundhati Nyaya, step by step. What does the Upanishad say? Look at your body. Look at the body. Yes. Are you aware of the body as yourself? Yes. I am the body. Alright, start there. Instead of saying pancha kosha, kosha means a sheet, a covering. Instead of saying the body is a physical covering, the Taittiriya Upanishad actually says the body is the Atma. Body is Atma. Annamaya Atma. This body is made of food. What we eat gets transformed into this body. Already what we ate, a delicious lunch in the morning, is getting transformed into the body now. So, body is a product of food. Annamaya. Anna means food, and transform, maya pervaded, the body is pervaded by food, transform food. Anna also means matter, physical matter. So body is made of matter. In fact, one scientist, he said, you meaning the body, you are food rearranged. Food is arranged on your plate.
Yes.
Food is rearranged, it becomes your body. And I also read this interesting comment by an Italian actress in Hollywood, a long time ago, 1960. She was asked about the secret of her beauty, physical beauty. She said, oh, this, it's all spaghetti. No, it's all pasta. It's all pasta. It's all pasta. She was early Vedantin, I think. Annamaya, physical body is made of food. Now, he says, the Upanishad tells us, look at this body. This body changes. It's constantly subject to change. The body when you were a little kid, 5 years old, 6 years old, imagine a little boy or girl, how different it is from what we are now. The body of a teenager, body of a young man or woman, body of a middle-aged person, now I'm an old person, now sick and maybe decaying, body breaking down. So much changes. And yet we say, I was that kid, I was the teenager, I was that young person, now I'm this old person. I don't say that teenager or that kid was somebody different. Though if you see pictures or if somebody sees, they cannot match the two persons together. Very difficult. Very difficult, you can identify, but not so easy. Seems so different, and yet we say, I am the same. I am the same. The body keeps changing. This lady, one of the nuns in the convent of Santa Barbara, she was telling me that just a few days ago, I was walking past a big glass window and I saw this lady in the window. Who's this? And I realized,
I am that one. And I said, I've become so old. It seems just the last 40 years have gone by. Just no. You can easily remember being a child. You can easily remember being a teenager. And it's changed so much. And yet I feel I'm the same person. Maybe a little wiser. Maybe I know a little more. Maybe I've forgotten a lot. But still, I'm the same person. I was that person. I am this person now. So, I am unchanging, related to the body. The body is a series of changes. One. Second, I am the experiencer of the body. I'm the one who experiences the body from within. Isn't it true that I know the body? The body doesn't know. Is it true? Yeah. Drishya. I know the body, the body doesn't know. One British psychologist gave a wonderful experiment just to demonstrate it to yourself. He says, simply, look at your hand. Feel the experience you are having now. In this experience, what is this experience? Isn't it the experience of you experiencing the hand? Is the hand experiencing you? No. Every time you look at any part of the body, feel it, the experience, taste that experience. What's happening there? You are looking at a part of your body. Your hand is not, that would be scary. The hand also stares back at you. Say, hello. No, you have never had such a feeling. Simply, straightforward feeling is that I am looking at that. Whatever I am, somewhere here in this body, whatever I am, I'm looking at that hand. Any part of the body you see. Now take all parts of the body together, all the entire body. Same principle. I am the one experiencing this body. The body is not experiencing. I am the drashta, the body is drishya. I am the seer, the body is seeing. Literally so. Not only that, to be the drashta, to be the seer, I must be the conscious, sentient, aware, intelligent entity. Chetana. And the body must be an object of knowledge. Jana. I'm not making a claim here. I'm inviting you to see it as a fact. In Vedanta, one thing is to be understood. The demarcation between conscious and non-conscious is not the way we understand it. We have been schooled from childhood in the idea of living and non-living. Remember as kids, I don't know, we did it. In class 5 or 6, 10 points of difference between living and non-living. Living beings, they can experience, they can reproduce, they will consume food and process it, they grow, and living, non-living things do not. Division between living and non-living. In Vedanta, you don't make a division between living and non-living. In Vedanta, you make a division between Chetana and Jara. Chit Jara. How do you define what is Chetana and Jara? Isn't it living beings are conscious, non-living beings are not conscious? No. Grasp this. In fact, I say this one central point is the building block of Vedanta. If you can just grasp it, it's extremely simple. If you can grasp it, almost everything about Vedanta opens up afterwards. I'll show you how to open it up. Grasp this. What is Chetana or Chaitanyam in Vedanta and what is Jada, non-Chetana, non-conscious, conscious and non-conscious? Very simple. Anything that you can be aware of is Jada. Whatever you experience, by definition, is an object of your experience. Isn't it? Whatever you experience is an object of experience, it is Jada. That which experiences is Chetana. Very simple division. You say, no, Swami, I'm experiencing so many people. Yes. This table, chair, all these are Jada. But the other people are Jada, they'll be annoyed. If I see you're all Jada. But wait. What are you experiencing? Exactly. You're experiencing the body of the person. Seeing a body. Seeing a behavior, listening to their voice. That's all you do. If you are a telepath, then you will read their thoughts. But the consciousness in there, you can never experience. The consciousness of in that body, functioning through that body, never becomes an object of my experience or anybody else's experience. Only you, that consciousness, experiences it all the time as me, myself. I'll repeat that. You can experience living bodies. So you can experience body, you can experience life in that body. But they are all objects to you, not consciousness. They are all objects to the consciousness shining through you right now. So all that we experience is jada. Non-living things are jada for Vedanta. Living things are also jada for Vedanta. Body is jada. Prana is jada. Life itself is jada. Mind is jada. Intellect is jada. Why? By sheer definition. If you know it, it is jada. Jada means insentient. What is sentient? The one which knows. One small qualification. Practically, we also speak of living beings as chetana. Why do you do that? Vedanta says in a secondary sense. Because that consciousness is channeled through body and mind. Body and mind shines with consciousness. This does not. Practically. Hence, secondarily, we can call this body and mind chetana. Living body and mind chetana. Only in a secondary sense. Not in the real meaning of the term. In the real meaning of the term, only consciousness is chetana. Every object of consciousness is jada for Vedanta. If you just make this distinction, you find everything else becoming clear. So I am aware of my body. That which is aware is drashta. That which you are aware of is drishya. You are the seer, the body is the seer. You are the experiencer, body is the experience. Always, the seer is the one who is conscious. The seeing is the one which is inert. Insentient. So you, the seer of the body from within the body, you are conscious. You are chetana, body is jada. I have said 3 points so far. You are, by your own experience, nitya, relatively, continuous. Body is continuously changing. Anitya, vikari, changing. From childhood till old age, continuous. I have been watching it change. Or not watching it change, sometimes only shocked. Oh, I changed so much. So, that's number one. Number two, you are the experiencer, body is always experience. You are drashta, body is drishya. Number three, you are chetana, body is jara. Because of these reasons, Upanishad tells you, body cannot be this atma. Body is not the self. Body is not the self. You cannot be the body. How can drashta be drishya? How can chaitanya be jada? How can nitya be anitya? They are different. So body is anitya, drishya, jada. Anityatva, drishyatva, jadatva, naham deha. Deha is anitya, drishya, jada. Changing, experienced, insentient. I am unchanging, relatively. I am the experiencer, I am conscious. Upanishad says, you are right. I tricked you. Body is not the Atma. There is something which other than that is the Atma. What is that? Anyantaratma pranamaya. Inside this body flows life. Modern biology considers this very prana as a set of processes. Assimilation, respiration, circulation, all these processes. All of these, according to Vedanta, because of, according to ancient Indian wisdom, Ayurveda and all, are because of something called prana. The Indians call it prana, the Chinese call it qi, the Japanese call it ki, the reiki which we did today, reiki, the flow of energy, ki. So ki, prana, qi, they are the same. Tai chi, qi. Prana is life forces, that which keeps this body alive. When a person dies, what do we say in India? Prana nikal gaya. Prana has gone. So the prana is unlike another body, but it's not a physical body like this. It's a subtle body, which inhabits this body and makes it breathe, which makes us breathe, which circulates the blood in our body, which takes in the food which we put into our bellies, it transforms it without our knowing, day and night is working, transforms it into the very stuff of this body, and generates energy for our life activity. That is past. It's life. So am I that? in the Upanishad says Pranamaya Atma. That Pranamaya Atma is, he says three things: Sukshma, Pratyak, and Yahu. Subtler than this physical body, Sukshma, subtler than this gross body is the Prana. Pratyak means inwards. Inwards, where is this Prana? Inert to this physical body is the Prana. It's not a thing inside the body. It's life forces, the life processes flowing through this body. And Vyapaka, it pervades the body. Wherever the Prana is, the body is in the body. The Prana withdraws from that, then that part will die. So, Prana is Sukshma, subtler, Pratyak, Pratyak inward, Pratyak means inward, Para, outward, Pratyak, inward, and Vyapaka, pervading this entire physical body. So, am I life? Am I Prana? He says, go deeper. Look at the Prana. Sometimes you are energetic. Look at kids, bursting with energy, and like a volcano all the time. You get exhausted trying just watching them. And look at an old person in assisted living care centers, and most of them happy just lying down. It's a job to get that person to come up and do some exercise and move around. Prana is variable throughout the day. Sometimes hungry, sometimes not hungry, sometimes energetic, sometimes feeling sick. It's because of the prana. Prana is continuously variable. Vikari, anitya. You, the knower of the prana. I am the same one who was feeling sick, now I feel healthy. I am the same one who was feeling hungry, after eating nicely, I feel satiated. I am the knower of the prana. So I am the same person. Nitya, prana is changing. Vikari, anitya. I experience the prana, isn't it? Simple thing. In all the yogas, you follow your breath. Breathing in and breathing out. Are you not watching the breath? You are the one who knows the prana. You are not the prana. Is the breath watching you or are you watching the breath? You are the knower of the breath. You are the knower of the prana. And being the knower, you must be conscious and the prana must be jara. You are Chaitanyam, prana is jara. Because the prana is anitya, because the prana is drishya, because the prana is jara, it cannot be you, it cannot be atma. Anityatva, drishyatva, jaratva, na pranamaya atma. Pranamaya is not the atma. The moment you reject the annamaya as atma, annamaya becomes a covering for the real atma. You call it annamaya kosha. Moment you reject the pranamaya as the atma, it becomes a covering for the real atma. Because it becomes pranamaya kosha. That's why they are called pancha kosha. Kosha means achharaka, which covers. Upanishad tells you, you are right, you are something deeper than the life forces. You are inner to the life forces. Pratyam. You are subtler than the life forces. Sukshma. And you are more pervasive than the life forces. Vyapaka. What is that? Mind. The very mind which you are thinking, that's what you are. And actually most grown-up, educated, normal adult people identify more with the mind than the body. We mostly feel we are something inside this body. We don't exactly think that I am my hair and my nails and all that. I don't think that. It's like I put on a dress. We feel like that. We also say, my body. Like my shirt. So my body. I have put on these two dresses. Outer garments, annamaya kosha. Inner garment, pranamaya kosha. I am the mind. That's the reason. But apply the same reasoning. Does the mind change? Oh yes. Much more than annamaya, much more than pranamaya. Mind is continually changing. Somebody said, every day we have more than 16,000 thoughts. Not different thoughts, then we will be geniuses or mad people. But mostly repeating it, mostly worthless thoughts, we repeat it in our pattern. But discrete thoughts, I don't know if it is 16,000, but anyhow, changes continuously. Are you changing with the mind? No, you know the changing mind. So the mind changes, you are the one which is aware of the changing mind. So you are in relation to the changing mind, you are not changing. Mind is anityam. flickering. You are the death, not flickering. It is the mind. The mind is known, Krishya. You are the knower of the mind. Are you not aware? If you are happy, are you not aware that you are happy? Are you not, if you are unhappy, are you not aware? Oh yes, I am aware. I am really aware when I am unhappy. I am aware of the states of my mind. I am the knower, the seer. The mind is an object. The moment you say mind is an object, jada, insentient, it is an object of consciousness. You are the consciousness which watches the mind. Though we always function together with the mind, we identify with the mind, we think we are the mind, but the mind is equally an object, as much as an object as these hands and feet are an object, as much as an object as this glass. The mind is an object. A subtle object is a gross object. The mind is a subtle object. But it's an object. Why? Because it changes, you don't change. You are the observer. You are the seer and it is seen. You are conscious. It's strange to say mind is not conscious. Strange to say that. But the fact is, according to the definition of Vedanta, consciousness and object of consciousness. The mind is surely an object of consciousness. Right now, see? Just think 2 plus 2, 4. Are you not aware of that thought? It's an object. That which is aware, drashta, is you. That which is conscious, chetana, is you. That which is relatively unchanging, who did not think 2 plus 2 is equal to 4, thinks 2 plus 2 is equal to 4, and then forgets that again, who watches these changes, that one is you. Mind is not you. Anityatva, Rishyatva, Jaratva, Na Mana Atma, Manomaya Na Atma, Anatma. Mind is not the Atma. All our thoughts, emotions, memories, all gone. They are not you. It's something that you have put on. If at this stage it's such a relief. You think about it. It's an enormous relief. You are not tied by your mind. You are not a prisoner of your mind. You are not your mind. You are not your mind. In fact, every day you prove it when you go to sleep. You shut down the mind. You still exist without the mind. After all, you are the one who is sleeping. You are the one who wakes up. Then the mind can be set aside. In deep meditation, samadhi, the mind stops. Chitta vritti nirodha. If the mind stops, if you and the mind, you would have stopped also. Switched off. No. The yogi remains. Mind has stopped. Ramana Maharshi is sitting, usual, quietly sitting there. Somebody asks, what is the Maharshi thinking? Somebody else sitting nearby said, the Maharshi is not thinking anything. Ramana Maharshi smiled and nodded. I just said, why do you have to think all the time? It's like I have feet and hands, I have to run away or run all the time and grasp things all the time. Why? Because I have hands. I have to. No! Mind is there, use it. But what happens to us is, when we don't want to use it, mind goes on chatting. When we want to use it, it will not do what we want it to do. It does what it wants to do. It's untrained. That's a different topic of yoga. How to train the mind is a huge science in itself. It's the science of Raja Yoga. But here we are concerned about something higher than Raja Yoga. We are concerned about Brahma Vidya. Mind is not you. Anatma. There is something subtler than the mind. Sukshma. Something inner to the mind. And something more pervasive than the mind. Sukshma, pratyam, vyapaka. What is that? You! You! That's what we are seeing. What is that? And that they will say is the intellect. Mind becomes a kosha, a covering. Manomaya kosha. Now mind and intellect are actually the same, so we've got two functions of that. Intellect, why do you make a difference then between mind and intellect? Mind is has, when there are certain reasons for that. The mind takes in impressions from the sense organs. Thinks about it. The mind is a place where you have feelings. Mind is the place where memories come up, chitta also. The intellect takes what has been presented by the mind and deliberates upon it. The intellect is not connected to the world outside. The mind is connected to the world through the sense organs. What is affected by the world is the mind first. Then only we use our reasoning power to think about it. What do we say in Hindi? Thande dimag se socho yaar. You know, the Sunday months is it. Mind will get heated by an experience. When somebody inserts you, there's a failure, there's a shock that comes fire first to the mind, through the sense organs. Then the intellect deliberates upon that. If we allow, things about it cool. Sometimes we don't allow it to. So the response comes again from the mind itself. An agitated mind. Anyway, so you are the intellect. It's called Vijnanamaya. Yeah, that seems to be correct. Apply the same logic again. Does the intellect change or not? Oh, very much. Imagine our understanding when we were in kindergarten. Imagine about what we thought about ourselves, what we knew about the world, what we thought about our parents, what we liked and disliked, what decisions we made as children, as teenagers, as young people. Every bit of knowledge changes the intellect. The intellect is continuously changing. And are you not the witness of the changing intellect? Did you not see the intellect when you were a kindergarten kid? If you don't remember that, even a high school kid, like in a college, as a young person, as an old person, throughout the day, before Vedanta class, during Vedanta class, after Vedanta class, the intellect has changed because this is food for the intellect that's going on. So the intellect is changed by this process. Intellect changes. You are the unchanging observer of the intellect. And I've already said it, observer. You are the drashta, intellect is drishya. If the intellect is drishya, intellect becomes an object, jada. It's so strange to call the mind and intellect jada. That's what we consider to be chetana all the time. That's because consciousness is closest to it. Mind and intellect borrow consciousness from the atma. So they are always shining. That's why it is alright to call them chetana. But in Vedanta, we have to be very precise. It's like the moon. Is the moon a luminous body or not? Yes and no. When we first studied luminous bodies in class 5, grade 5 or 6, sun and star and moon and all those things which shine are luminous bodies. When we know a little more, the moon is not luminous in itself. It borrows light from the sun. In the same way, the intellect is lit up all the time. Mind is lit up all the time. We always feel conscious in the mind and intellect. Always feel conscious. Because of its proximity to the Atman, its proximity to consciousness is always lit up. But it's like the moon. It's like the moon. In Vedanta, they gave a beautiful example. The sun shining on the moon reflects light on the earth, and at night the earth is lit up. So, sun is Atman, the moon is the mind, and the world at night is our samsara. So, we are aware at night, we are not aware of the sun. This is the beauty of this example. At night, we do not see the sun. In our ignorance, the night of our ignorance, we are not aware of Brahman, Atman, God, nothing. We are only aware of the mind. And we think in our ignorance, the light by which we experience the world comes from the mind. It does not come from the mind. The mind borrows it. Just like the sun, like sunlight is borrowed by the moon. At night, we are, it is true that moonlight illumines everything. But the moonlight is not real. It's not really moonlight. It's just reflected off the moon. It belongs to the sun. Proof, without the sun, moon has no light. When the earth comes in between the sun and the moon becomes dark. Moon has no light of its own. The mind and intellect have no consciousness of their own. Because of the self, of the real you, they appear to be lit up by consciousness. So it's an object. The intellect is an object. Beyond the intellect, is there something beyond the intellect? Yes. We have an experience in deep sleep when we are not aware of the body, when we are not aware of the mind, we are not aware of the intellect. We don't even have the experience, I am sleeping. That idea is also not there. If it is there, you are not sleeping. Sometimes mothers will tease the children that, is the good boy sleeping? If he is sleeping, his right foot will move. And the little boy is right foot moves into the chest. Which means he's not sleeping. So mind completely shut down in deep sleep. Now, do we exist in deep sleep or not? Yes, we do. Somebody may say, no, there's nothing in deep sleep. No, we do. Because we have the experience upon waking up. Classic Vedanta explanation. When we wake up, we say, Sukham maham asvapsanam napinchi lavenisham. I slept happily. and I did not know anything. I slept like a log, you see. I didn't know. I had a very good sleep. How did you have that experience if you were not there? You see, alone, at that time I did not have that experience. When I wake up, when you wake up, you think that and you say, but do you say that I am having that deep sleep experience now? No. You're saying I had it at that time. So what recorded it? What was aware of it? Now that is able to think it and say it when the mind starts functioning when you wake up. You know that the mind was not there, so you are not able to think it. Remember, we are at an extremely subtle level here now. We have a tendency to not even think as the mind, we think as the body. We have gone beyond the realm of the body, the realm of the prana, arundhati nyaya, satular. We are in the faintest star now. We have gone beyond the realm of the mind, we have gone beyond the realm of the intellect, we have gone to the realm of deep sleep. That blankness of deep sleep, that is also experienced by some. That comes and goes. Deep sleep is not there always. If it comes and goes, you are the one which was awake, who was in deep sleep, who was again awake. So you cannot be that deep sleep thing. That what is called Anandamaya. It was an object of your experience. Did you experience deep sleep or not? Whatever you were at that stage, that one experienced deep sleep. So deep sleep is an object. And you are the experiencer, drashta, official. The moment you say deep sleep is an object, it becomes jhana. And it's easy to understand that Anandamaya is a jhana because it's blank. It is the absence of all experience, blankness. And you are the one which was a witness to that absence of all experience, blankness. That in itself is an experience of nothingness, blankness. It's not nothingness, it's an experience of nothingness. That which experiences it. So Anandamaya, the last one, we also not. Why? Anityatva, Vishyatva, and Charatva. Now you are ready. After this, now he will tell us about the Atma. Oh, long journey, 8 o'clock, we must time to kind of fill the talk, he will tell us about the Atma. But the Upanishad, Taittiriya Upanishad, does something funny at this point. It keeps on happening. Nothing. Chup. Brahma, Kuchyam, Pradeshtar, and chup. Nothing more. You have described, I am not the body. It is called Annamaya Kosha, covering for the Atma. I am not the prana. It is Pranamaya Kosha, covering for the Atma. I am not the mind. The Manomaya Kosha, covering for the Atma. I am not the intellect. Vijnanamaya Kosha, covering for the Atma. I am not the deep sleep state, Anandamaya also. That's also Kosha. Now tell me about the Atma. We are expecting that. We are expecting something like the Russian dolls or nested dolls are there. I say one of them showed. Well, you can use this as a demonstration for your Vedanta class. You take an open one, a small doll will be. Open one, a small doll will be. So at the end, we find one final doll. That's what we are thinking. One final Atma will be there. Angushta Matra Purusha, like a little doll will be there inside. We find Atma. No, keeps going. Now, what happens here is, why does it? Is a thing to be realized. Yes. I always tell the story about the 10 persons who crossed the river. It's a classic story. Follow this carefully. Here is the crux. If you get the story, you will get Vedanta. And if you can really connect it to your life, you will become enlightened. By the time you walk up those stairs. At the very least, if you get it, you'll be clear about Vedanta. See, ten friends crossed on a journey, they crossed the river. After crossing the river, one of them said that, have we all crossed or did anybody drown? Let's count. So one of them counted. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Oh my God, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Oh my God, one of us has drowned. Other person said, no, let me count. Each one counted 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. 10th person is not there. Oh my God, we were 10 and the 10 persons drowned. And we sat down and started crying. Now, inevitably a wise person will walk by. Wise person is a guru. He's walking by. Why are you crying? Oh sir, we were 10 persons and we crossed the river and the tragedy stopped and the 10th person drowned. 10th person drowned?
he counted, I mean, he saw there were 10 persons sat there. How do you know 10 persons are wrong? 10 persons is wrong. Sir, we counted. And we saw there are only 9. The man understood. He said, now follow this carefully. First he said, stop crying, relax, the 10th person is there. Where? That I'll tell you. First believe, 10th person is there. Guru says first, Shraddhaswa. Have Shraddha person. You are not the body and mind. You are verily divinities on earth. You are God Himself. You are one with God. Chidananda Rupa Shiva. I don't think it. Wait. Hold on. Just accept it as a working hypothesis that it's possible. We will show you now. Then that man said, you stand in a queue. Still stood in a queue. That first part is important. Unless we calm down a little bit and we put our minds to Vedanta, you will never get that enlightenment. You are always crying, oh, the 10th person is drowned, I lost my job, I have been laid off, I am sick, I did not win the lottery, what not? All of that is 10th person's death. All of our time, throughout life, 10th person is not there. 10th person is there. Now, he said to one of them, count. Count it, no, count it. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. That man came and got hold of his hand and turned it around. Dashamas Kwamasi, you are the 10th. 10! Oh, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. 10! Oh, the 10th person is there. The others said, let me try it, let me try it. And they also started trying it. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10! Oh my God, the 10th person is there. And I am so happy. He may laugh at them. We are doing it all the time. See what is happening against us. What was the mistake of the person who was counting? You may see he did not count himself. No. He was counting. He was looking for counting the 10th person. But where was he looking? He has found 9 persons. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Follow this carefully. 9 persons. Now he expects one more person like that. That will complete the 10th person. Exactly in the same way when we don't do panchakosha vichara. Here, body, I understand. Pranamaya, I understand, yeah, number 2. Go deeper, it's thinking, feeling, mind, yeah, I understand that also. I am using my buddhi, hopefully, to understand Vedanta. So that is the jigyanamaya, intellect. Yeah, that also I understand. And beyond that is a blankness. If you try to go beyond the intellect, you find a blankness, just that, blankness. That also I understand. Understand with the help of intellect only. I understand. Now what I am looking for? Beyond that one thing called the Atma. Isn't it? But the Atma, the Purusha, which they promised us, is not a thing. This is a thing. If it became a thing, what will happen? Anityatva, Jagatva, Drishyatva, Anatma. It will not be Atma. It's not a thing. It's you yourself. It's not an object. It is the subject. We miss it. We always think when we are looking for the Atma, we are looking for a thing. Whether it's a we have read philosophy, I know Swami, Atma is not a thing. But subconsciously we are still looking for something. It's not an object. It's not a thing. It is that which sees the object. Which object? Any object. I was reading a very nice conversation. You heard of Nisargadatta? The great mystic, the great realized soul in Mumbai. He lived in a slum in Mumbai. Somebody asked him, if I do Atma, Vichara, Vedanta, so how is that? He said, you find out who I am. Then the interesting thing comes next. That person said, at the end of the process, what will I know? Nisargadatta says, you will know what you are now. Will I not know who I am? No. If you know who you are, it becomes an object. You will know everything as not. Everything as not. And I am the knower of everything. You see, like the eyes. What is the proof that you are all here? How do I know all of you? These eyes. I see all of you.
Now, how do I know that the eyes are moving? Because I see everything. That's why. So, those eyes themselves are not something that we see. It's not another thing to be seen. But it is that which sees. All this is something that can be seen by the eyes. The eyes themselves are not something out there which can be seen by the eyes. Then you need another pair of eyes. So, the Atman is not a thing, not an object. It is the very subject itself. It is pure consciousness. That's why we say pure consciousness. Is there something called impure consciousness? If you mix a little bit of the object with consciousness, you get impure consciousness. So the intellect, is it pure consciousness or not? It's impure consciousness. Because with the intellect, I can understand many things. But the intellect also itself, I can be understood. It can be an object. It's there in the consciousness, but it's not the consciousness itself. When I am using intellect, it is consciousness plus intellect. When I am using the mind, it is consciousness plus intellect plus mind. When I am breathing in and out and I have this experience, it is consciousness plus mind and intellect and prana. And sense organs and body. The consciousness itself never becomes an object. So this is the first problem in Vedanta. The first problem in Vedanta, which is tackled so beautifully by the Vaitiriya Upanishads. The first problem, primary problem is, we are looking for an object. God, Atma, Purusha, Sakshi, witness. We are looking for a witness. Something vaguely, we have like a witness who stands in the court and gives his account. Not like that. You are the witness, ever present. Proof, because you are experiencing everything. Yeah, you are the experiencer. The moment you say it cannot be known as an object, Swami Vivekananda said, you can never know the Atman as an object. But then he says, don't go away with the feeling that it's unknown. It is more than unknown. Nityena Upanishad says, Anya Devata Vidita Navidita Adati. What is that which is, anything that you know is not the same. Because it's an object of knowledge. So is the self unknown? No, it is other than the unknown. See, in the entire universe, there are things which you know and things which you do not know. These are two things. The entire universe of discourse can be divided into the known and the unknown. And what is apart from the known and the unknown? Not a known thing, it's not an unknown thing. What's apart from known and unknown? Only one thing, the knower. I'm sorry, I cannot make it. We always try to grasp it as an object. I cannot make it an object. It is more than the object. You are that. Because of that, all objects are one. Just as you know that your eyes are functioning by seeing things, you don't have to see in your mirror to see whether I have eyes or not. Anything that you see is a proof that you have got eyes. In the same way, any experience that you have is a proof that you are conscious. All experiences, pratibodha viditam matam. In every experience, I realize myself as pure consciousness. He says, that is immortality, that is brahmajnana. Now another problem comes. The moment I think, somebody tells me, okay, it cannot be shown as an object. The second problem in Vedanta will be, immediately I will say, oh, it doesn't exist. You see, there are two problems in Vedanta. One is trying to find it as an object. God, Atma, Brahma as an object, as a thing. A very refined thing, but still a thing also. And the moment you say it cannot be done, immediately our doubt becomes, oh, it's a theory, it doesn't exist. Shunya. Shunya. It's the void. It does not, there is no such thing as Atma or Atma. That's why after the Vaitiriya Upanishad concludes there, Anandamaya, and then keeps quiet. That's why the Upanishad does it so such a beautiful job of dealing with the problem of objectifying the Atman. You see, when we teach Panchakosha Vichara in a Vedanta text or in a classroom, what we do in Vedanta is, we say there are five koshas, Annamaya, Pranamaya, Manomaya, Vijnanamaya, Anandamaya, and beyond that is Atma. You murdered Vedanta. Because he'll immediately think there are five koshas and one more thing is there called Atma. You see how clever the Upanishad is. Upanishad never says that. Upanishad says that there are five things you can find of your personality, body, yartha, prana, mana, thoughts,
feelings, buddhi, ideas, understanding. The Anandamaya Kosha, deep sweet blankness. These are the things which you can experience about yourself. But you yourself, if you are consciousness, you are not a thing. That's why the Upanishad keeps quiet. The student had this next problem. Second problem is, so the Atma does not exist. So the student asks in next question in the Upanishad. Asad Brahma Veda Chet Asanneva Sabhavati. Suppose you say, in that case, the Atman, the self, does not exist. Two problems. Objectifying or nihilism. Not there. Void. How does the Upanishad deal with it? Here, I'll quickly give you the arguments which will show that the Atman exists. It's not an object. And yet it is not non-existence also. It is not a thing. It is not nothing also. It is no thing. It's not a thing, an object. It's not zero also, nothing. It's no thing. What is no thing? The subject. How Vidyaranya in Panchadashi, in the Panchakosha Viveka, third chapter of Panchadashi, Panchakosha Viveka, there towards the end he deals with this problem of, but then there is no such thing as Atma, it's Shunya. Why? Nihilism. He answers those questions, giving beautiful arguments. I just share a few of them and then conclude. He says, to the Buddhist opponent, the Shunyavadi. Now let me say, I have a personal interest in Shunyavada and I have studied Nagarjuna's Mula Madhyama Prakari. He was a great philosopher, what we call Andhra now. He was a great philosopher from 2000 years ago, 700 years before Shankara. 700 years before Shankara, Nagarjuna, he wrote the Mula Madhyama Prakarika. He was the source philosopher of what we call Shunyavada, the Mula Madhyama Prakarika. I think we traditional Vedantic opponents of Shunyavada, we do him an injustice. He did not mean to say that there is nothing. His approach is quite different. He clearly says the ultimate tattva is not that it exists. It does not exist. Not that it does not exist. Not that it both exists and does not exist. And not that it does not exist and does exist. Not that also. Chatush koti vinir mukta tattva. Beyond the four qualities. That's what he says. This is very similar to Advaitic Nirguna. Now what Vidyaranya says? He says, the question may come to our mind. Only these five things are experienced when I look at myself. What are the five things? The Panchakosha. Nothing beyond that is experienced. So why should I talk about Satchidananda, Atma and all this? Simple question, direct question. All that we see in a subtle way, watch ourselves, we can talk about five things, Panchakosha, or these five layers of our inner personality. Beyond these five, nothing more is it. So why are you talking about Atma? The logic here is, if I say, there is no elephant here, you will say you're right. Why? Because if an elephant was here, you could have seen it. You could have seen it. Because we cannot see it. We say, it's not there. If it was there, you would have seen it. If not there, we don't see it. We don't see it, that means it's not there. If it was there, I could have seen it. Because I don't see it, it's not there. That's the logic. So I don't experience any Atma. There's no such thing as Atma. Now Vidyaranya see. Three arguments, beautiful and powerful arguments. I will give them in brief. Number one argument. It is true that we do not experience anything apart from the five koshas. And the opponent, you can imagine, he says, yes, that's what I'm saying. But it's also true that we do experience the five koshas. Yes, so if you experience the five koshas, my question will be, what is experience? What is experience in the five koshas? And there's a long discussion on this. You can discuss it. He said, no, why can't we say that the mind is experiencing everything? What about the mind itself? Well, the mind is experiencing itself. It's also true because many people have this doubt. Probably you are saying that the mind is, you are the witness of the mind. But isn't it the mind observing itself? That question will come. Because the mind has the capacity to introspect. We call it introspection. What is the difference between Atma or Sakshi illumining the mind and the mind introspecting upon itself? What's the difference? You understand the question? The difference is this. Mind introspecting is one thought about another thought. You're thinking about your feelings, introspection. You're thinking about some concept, introspection. Inside, in your mind. One thought about another thought. But both of those thoughts are shining in consciousness. Is it not true that when the thought comes, even when you do not introspect, are you not aware of your thoughts? All the time aware of my thoughts. I'm happy. When I think about my happiness, I'm introspecting. And if I do not think about my happiness, even then am I not aware of my happiness? What is aware of that happiness? It's not another thought. It's not the mind thinking about its own happiness. It's something beyond the mind which illumines, directly illumines the feeling in the mind, the thoughts in the mind. So, Vidyaranya's, our first argument is, it is true that there is nothing experienced beyond the five koshas. That's the human personality. It's also true that the five koshas are objects of experience. If there are objects of experience, there must be a subject. Something is experienced in the five koshas. Number one argument. Therefore, he says, the Atman is perceived. The Atman exists. You cannot say Atman does not exist. The Atman exists. But it is not perceived because it is not an object of experience. That's why it is not perceived. Not because this is natu asattaya. Not because it does not exist. A thing may not be perceived, number one, because it does not exist, or because it's not an object of experience. And the subject is never an object of experience. It's a simple thing. Suppose in the basement, before the class started, somebody said, go and see if anybody's there. Person comes down, you come down here, and you look around, and you go back upstairs and report, oh, nobody was there, I saw. Is it totally correct? No. There was no person for him to see. But that person, you were there. You did not see anybody. It is correct. Your report is correct. But when you say nobody was there, no. How do you say nobody was there? Unless you were there. Right? So, what you mean is, I did not see anybody as an object of my experience. Of course, I was there. I was aware of the absence of persons. If you are aware of the absence of persons, then there is somebody who is aware of the absence of persons, and that's you. So, the Atman exists as that which is aware of the five koshas. So the Atman is not seen as an object because it's not an object, it's the subject which knows all objects. And it's not seen not because it does not exist, because it's a subject. No, because it's not an object. That's why it is not seen. The thing may not be seen in two cases. One is it does not exist at all. Or because it's not an object. It is the one which is seen. First argument. Subtle argument, but beautiful argument. He says, Jnatri Jnanantara Avat Natu Asatya. Because there is no other consciousness to objectify the Atman. Atman alone is the subject. How will you see? So it is not seen, not because it's non-existent, but because it's the subject. First argument. Second argument. A very nice idea. It says, take the example of salt or sugar. Here is milk, here is water. You add sugar to it, milk is sweet, water is sweet. When you add sugar to it, how did the milk which was not sweet or the water which was not sweet, how did it become sweet? Because of the contact with sugar, because of relation with sugar, because of adding sugar to it. I'm just telling this, though it's not very relevant, but I just remember many years ago in Jamshedpur in India, we have many schools there, Ramakrishna Mission run schools. So in one of the schools, there was a program, cultural program put up by the children. And they were supposed to, the little children, I think grade 1 probably, each one was acting the part of something, like somebody was a flower,
somebody was something or the other, water or something, somebody was. And there was one little boy who you could see was absolutely did not want to be in that place. And his role was to step, just to step forward and say, I am sugar and I am sweet. So when his turn came, you know, already on the verge of tears, somebody, there was another mama, one of the kids pushed him forward. So he stumbled forward and he said, I am sugar and I am sweet. And then he burst into tears. How does the water become sweet? Because of contact with sugar. How does the milk become sweet? Because of contact with sugar, by adding sugar to it. Now if you ask, how will the sugar become sweet? By adding what to it will the sugar become sweet? It is not necessary, because you see, we have defined sweetness as adding sugar. Now, by using the definition, if somebody asks, so what will I add to sugar to make it sweet? So no, you don't need to add anything. Sugar is sweet by itself. It's an exception to all the things which require addition of sugar to make them sweet. Sugar is sweet by itself. It does not, it's an exception. No, you told us to make it sweet, you have to add sugar. No, sugar is such a thing which lends sweetness to others. By itself it is sweet. In the same way. So what does it mean? How are things known? By addition of consciousness. By bringing them in contact with consciousness. How do I know the glass is there? Glass is there, it comes in contact with the eyes. Eyes are in contact with the mind. Mind is illumined by consciousness and I become conscious of the glass. Contact with consciousness gives awareness. We become aware of something by adding consciousness or bringing something into relation with consciousness. Right? By bringing something into relation with consciousness, we become aware of it. Now the question is, how will you become aware of consciousness? You don't need to. It is sweet in itself, that means it's self-aware, self-effulgent. You don't need to add something to it to become aware of it. You need to add it to other things to be aware of those things. The consciousness itself, you don't need another consciousness to become aware of consciousness. You don't need to add sugar to sugar to make it sweet. That's the second argument of this. Swaprakasha. And the third argument he gives is a logical argument. O Buddhist, the Shunyavadi, there's a saying that in the 20th century, humanity lost faith in the existence of God. By the way, we lost faith in the existence of God. A poet writes that there is a God-shaped hole in the psyche of humanity. We are missing God. We try to fill it up with art and culture and science and social action and whatnot, but we are missing God. We lost faith in God. We can't believe in God anymore. So God-shaped hole in the human psyche. And somebody has quipped that the Buddhist replaced the God-shaped hole with the hole-shaped God. Shunya. The highest tattvam is Shunya. Now, Vidyaranya, back to the topic. The third argument Vidyaranya says, you are debating with me. Does the Atman exist or not? I say Atman exists. You say it is Shunya. Why it does not exist. Now, a debate requires, in traditional Indian debate, is Vadi and Prativadi. Debate is called Vada, debate. And it has two sides. Vadi is one who defends the thesis, Atman exists. Prativadi is the one who attacks, Atman does not exist. Right? Now he says, very interesting argument, it will infuriate anybody. He says, this thing which we are debating, what is this Atman? It's you yourself. When you say Atman does not exist, you don't exist. So the Prativadi does not exist. I mean, you don't exist. If you sincerely believe that the Atma is Shunya, then you, the Prativadi, you are Shunya, you don't exist. A debate requires Vadi and Prativadi, both must exist. That means two positions must exist. If you are saying this position does not exist, your whole point is this position does not exist, then I don't have anything to say to you because you don't exist. So, on a technical point of debate, you have lost the debate. Yeah. You are not allowed to say anything because you don't need to say anything. That's your position. Who is saying? I need an opponent to argue. You don't exist. So, that's a third answer to this. So, let me quickly sum up. What Yama told Nachiketa is, we are aware of five layers of personality. The sense organs, mind, intellect, something beyond that he calls it Abhyaktara, and beyond that is Purusha. In our terms, Annamaya Kosha, Pranamaya Kosha, Manomaya Kosha, Vijnanamaya Kosha, Anandamaya Kosha, beyond that, not an object, as the illuminer of these five, as the consciousness aware of these five, the unchanging Chidananda Rupa Shivoham, that is what we are. Two problems. We try to find it as an object, we will always fail. Like Nisargadatta says, after all this, what will I know? You will know what you are not. You will know the Panchakosha which you are not. So will I not know myself? Yes and no. You will not know yourself as an object, as a sixth one there. No. You will know yourself as the knower of self, never as something here. Second problem, nihilism. So Atma does not exist. Nothing. Nothing is repudiated by three arguments I gave you. It is not an object. Therefore you do not know it. Not because it does not exist. It lends awareness to you are aware of everything because of it. To become aware of it, you don't need another thing. It is self. It is consciousness. So it exists. And third, technical point. Minor argument, like a naughty school boy. You don't exist, so what can I say to you? Om Shanti 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 Hari Om Tat Sat Shri Ram Krishna Upanishad.
So, it is a profound journey.
It's an inward journey. From body, prana, to mind, to intellect, to beyond the intellect, to beyond that also, to the pure subject which you are. This is the journey. It's an inward journey we have taken. No time for questions now. We can talk about it after food, 8:30. Food. I just wanted to add one thing here. Today in the morning we chanted. You can easily now see the remarkable connection. It's as if we are chanting something to Ramakrishna. Omkara Vidyam. It says, look at this. Buddhescha Shakshi Nikhilasya Gantya. That which is the witness of the Buddhi. In all these. What is that? Okay. Look at it again. Yuvaveti sarvam natayasya veta. That which knows everything and whom nobody can know. What is that? It's the consciousness within us. That is what is being called Bhuvyam Krishna. It's not a person with a beard. The real nature of Ramakrishna is the consciousness within all of us. He says also here, Koshantarastham Paramartha Tattva, the ultimate reality residing within the five koshas. Who is that? Ramakrishna. And so on. Directly you see, if they are talking about what we chanted in the morning, oh, is it something to do with bhakti? We are praising Ramakrishna. You are talking about yourself. You are praising yourself, the true you. Okay. Thank you very much. So what do we do now?